This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Hope you had a good Cinco de Mayo. Somebody who I know had a good Cinco de Mayo because he's not afraid to get into the chips and the salsa and the queso. It's Mike Gold Jr. of ESPN. He joins us now on the Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline. Did you go ham for Cinco de Mayo, Golic?
I did, yeah. You know, I got together with a couple of friends. There were some quesadillas there. And the best part about it is when I, you know, the kind of friends I have, they overmake the portions because I choose wisely. And so that means I just had Cinco de Mayo Part 2 for lunch right before we got on the phone here. So it was a double up of there. It was a very, very happy celebration.
All right, there's a ton of directions that I want to go with you today, but let's just start FCS because I don't think that we're going to spend a ton of time on that. You've been involved with it this year. You've got Delaware at South Dakota State from Dana J. Dykhouse Stadiums in Brookings, South Dakota, coming up this weekend. This Delaware quarterback's fun to watch, and if you hadn't seen him play, he's a guy that does a lot on his own, but he can create. He's got a good arm. It's a fun team to watch. They play really good defense. And South Dakota State, kind of the favorite by everybody to go win this thing and take this thing. I know you're excited about calling this game, but what do you have your eye on specifically in this FCS matchup this weekend?
I think you really just mentioned it. And first off, I'm bummed. So we've been calling these games remote this year. I'm going to be calling remote from Bristol. And it's a shame because I'm a big fan of Brookings, South Dakota. I got to go out there when College Game Day was there a couple of seasons ago for their game against North Dakota State. And so you know, it's a shame I'm not going to be there, but you mentioned on the Delaware side, Nolan Henderson, who in their last game got himself beat up a little bit early in the first half, went down with a shoulder injury to his non-throwing shoulder, came back in the second half, and then took a shot that ended up getting a player ejected for targeting on the other side. And this guy just keeps going. My favorite part about him is the way he hunts contact. Still, they, in the middle of their last game, their FCS quarterfinal game, called Philly special in that game. And when the route wasn't there, Nolan Henderson was supposed to go out for the pass, saw it was covered. He realized, all right, I got to turn into a blocker, and immediately went hunting for contact. So, like you said, he's going to make a lot of plays when it breaks down. You know, their drop back passing game can turn into the Nolan Henderson rushing attack, even if he's not involved in it necessarily down in and down out. He's got great receivers. Thyrick Pitts, who's kind of their number one guy. Gene Coleman almost had a record for catches in a game for Delaware in that quarterfinal matchup. So I think there's a lot to get excited about offensively with that group, but it is led by the creativity and the extra effort from Nolan Henderson.
So what was the big key last week with Delaware? Of course, folks down here with Jacksonville State was kind of hoping the Gamecocks would be able to maybe pull the upset, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, you know, and it was kind of an adjustment from Delaware, and I give them a lot of credit. You know, we got a chance to talk to their offensive coordinator, Jared Ambrose, who said, we can win a lot of different ways, and they came out at the beginning of that game throwing it all over there, leaning into explosives because they had a lot of respect for that Jacksonville State rush, pass rush, excuse me. They understood personnel-wise, especially up front for them, that was going to be a load for them to bear. And so they were trying a lot of rollouts. They were trying a lot of extra things to protect Nolan Henderson in that first half. And then after the injury, you know, they're having to go to their backup quarterbacks. Anthony Paoletti's the guy they bring in for some wildcat stuff. We saw more of him in the middle, and they realized, all right, our defense is playing really well on the other side. We can just, as an offense, make sure we don't turn the ball over. We do what we can to just survive in advance because they know that's the name of the game right now. So I think it was that understanding and respect for Jacksonville State's pass rush initially, and then having the ability to adjust mid-game and say, all right, we know what we've got to do from here on out to make sure we advance because our defense has played that well.
Like I said, Mike Gold Jr. of ESPN joining us on the Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline now. A lot of different places I want to go. You did the Tennessee spring game. I guess my sort of thought process about this team going into the season the last few weeks has been, I don't really know what to tell you to be excited about. I don't know who other teams are really going to be scared of when they scout this team and go play them. But one thing that I know after watching the spring game is they're at least going to have opportunities to generate explosive plays on offense. I don't know how effective the individuals are going to be, but I know from a schematic passing tree standpoint, that will be very different Did you take away anything that should change our expectations for what Tennessee football will be this fall, being a part of those meetings with those coaches and seeing that product on the field?
So I don't think this fall, right? Because I think this fall, it's the beginning of a coaching change that started in the pandemic season. Like, there's all a bunch of reasons, in addition to the fact that Tennessee got absolutely gutted by the transfer portal. So I think this fall is going to be a bit of a struggle. But the reason I was optimistic in talking not only to Josh Heupel, but also to former players, alumni in that program who were around that weekend, and just kind of taking the temperature. And so far, it seems genuine. Players are enjoying this a lot more. And listen, Jeremy Pruitt was, you know, a good assistant coach before he got there, and is a guy that I think people have respect for. But he's also a very different, it's that Nick Saban-esque, we're going to do it this way, we're going to be here at this time. It's a little more militaristic in the way you go about it, versus Josh Heupel, who by all accounts has come in and has immediately started listening to the players, really taking what they're saying and implementing it and using it to help the way they're going to do their business there. So I combine that with knowing, all right, Josh Heupel and Danny White have a relationship coming into this, and there seems to be some acknowledgement that we know it's going to take a little while. Now, you guys know this, you know, better than I do even, that Tennessee fan base might decide at some point that that long-term horizon is not something they're willing to wait for. But at the very least, internally, they seem to all have the same understanding right now. And I can't say that was always the case in prior regimes.
If I understand correctly, you also had the Miami spring game. And so a lot of people down here anxious about Alabama's first opponent over to Atlanta, the Hurricanes. I know Derek King unable to participate in the spring, but Tyler Van Dyke, Jake Garcia, a lot of excitement about these backup quarterbacks during the spring game. Your overall impressions of those guys and also just Miami as a whole?
Yeah, so they were very clear in some of their intentions heading into the spring. They wanted this offense to get more explosive. Rhett Lashley, their offensive coordinator, said, we understood last year so much of what happened was because of De'Aaron King. They bring over Charleston Rambo, the transfer wideout from Oklahoma, and he was really the guy they were looking for. And coming out of that spring game, I took away three things really. One is Charleston Rambo lived up and looked like the deep threat they were looking for. We'll see if that translates to the fall when things are actually more complex. It's not the vanilla stuff you tend to see in the spring. But he was able to go down the field. He was a great option for any of the quarterbacks that were in the game. Number two is Jake Garcia looks like he's going to be the future there. I know there were a couple of quarterbacks in the mix, certainly Tyler Van Dyke, because De'Aaron King wasn't out there, and it was a great opportunity to get reps for those young guys. Jake Garcia, as a true freshman coming into that spring, the way he navigates the pocket, the way the ball looks coming out of his hand, it just looks different. It looks like someone who is ready for this level of competition already. And so the third thing then is it's going to be interesting to see what they can manufacture on the D-line. And we know Manny Diaz taking over play calling again for that group. They graduated a lot of talent into the NFL. We saw a bunch of those names come off the board in the NFL draft. Jalen Phillips, Quincy Roche, Greg Rousseau, who was the opt-out from last year. But there's not a ready answer for who steps up next in that D-line room. And we know that generally hasn't been the problem, but there was a lot of turnover, and you just wonder how much of that they can weather. But De'Aaron King certainly tilts the field in a way few players in college football can. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know if they're going to be able to give Alabama much trouble in week one, but in the ACC, that's going to be a team that now, with some turnover, especially Trevor Lawrence going on to the NFL, you know, what does North Carolina look at some of their weapons depart? Going to be an interesting team to watch.
All right, so before I move into some more fun topics, DeAndre Johnson's a guy I had high expectations for. Coming in from Tennessee, long, a guy who I mean, he has shown on film that he has the ability to get to the passer. I'm not sure what the status is during the spring, but is he not somebody that they think they can rely upon to get to the quarterback consistently?
No, listen, they spoke very highly of him. I think he's going to be the expected one there. Zach McLeod, who's been around this Miami team for a long time, moving to defensive end as well from linebacker. So, yeah, the transfer portal, which has been kind. I mean, a lot of the guys that I just mentioned from Miami that were departing were transfer portal success stories. They've really become, I think, one of the posters for that in college football. And we know that's only going to get more and more common as the rules have now changed, allowing one-time transfers. So, yes, DeAndre Johnson, absolutely a guy that I think there's some expectation and excitement around just because he's a veteran presence on the edge that they can trust. On the interior, they're bringing back Ford. They're bringing back some of the guys that got playing time in the last few seasons. But that edge, DeAndre Johnson, certainly has his work cut out for him, because there's going to be a major need for production at that spot.
Eight players from South Bend, Indiana, from the Fighting Irish, got drafted in the NFL draft. A lot of folks might say, okay, it's going to be a rebuilding process there for Brian Kelly. Your thoughts on those players, where they got drafted, and can the Irish, going back to that independent schedule, get back to the college football playoff?
Yeah, it's so interesting seeing the quotes coming out of spring ball this year from Brian Kelly, as, you know, we're looking for what the next quarterback's going to be. We had, in the first time in Brian Kelly's tenure, a multi-year starter at the quarterback spot, and Ian Book, who was one of those draft picks, ended up in New Orleans, which, what an unbelievable spot if you're a quarterback who, I think especially like Ian, still needs time and development at the NFL level. I think his ceiling is probably being a backup guy. But at Notre Dame, he did a lot of great things. And so that battle between Drew Pine and Jack Cohn, the transfer from Wisconsin, was the headline for the spring. There's no doubt. I think it's interesting listening to Brian Kelly talk about the standard out there right now. And he has made it very clear to this team that it's going to be a quarterback competition, which is something South Bend is used to in the Brian Kelly era. But also, they understand that the way they went about this spring, the young guys who maybe feel like, all right, I'm finally getting this opportunity, it's not enough to just be out there and giving effort anymore. This is a place that is a college football playoff standard of the way they're going to approach business. And for me, that was refreshing to hear, because you're right, there were a lot of names lost. I'll tell you, the couple I'm most excited about, I think that Liam Eichenberg heading down to Miami could be an immediate starter for them. I know they played three rookies on that offensive line last year. I know they played two at tackle and Hunt and Jackson on the other side, but I think Liam could slot in right away. He's going to be one of the more consistent linemen from this draft class. He was clean. That was always my word for him. But the guy I'm really excited to see is Tommy Tremble, who was Notre Dame's second tight end, but the number one, you know, bleep kicker and glass eater heading down to Carolina. And I know, Cole, that is our shared love language, is Tommy Tremble highlights. So I know you're going to be in part a Carolina fan this fall just for him.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of folks like trying to find the receptions in the yards. I was like, you're off target. Just go play another game. This is not the discussion for you. The discussion for you is, however, I have a list of things that we're going to talk about on the show that I watched during my recovery the last week after surgery. I went pretty hard into movies, shows, documentaries, and I saw you tweet about one after the draft. You said, okay, now it's time to watch Mortal Kombat. If you are around our age, I think it's easy to get excited about that movie or that phrase when you see it, because you probably spent hours playing the video game like I did. Was this last Mortal Kombat movie a waste of time, Michael Jr.?
No. This last Mortal Kombat movie was a reminder that attitude makes a lot of difference in the way that we approach things. Because if someone came into that Mortal Kombat movie expecting brilliant storytelling or expecting some sort of advanced-level plot, I question your awareness. Like, that says more about you than it does about the movie, because, Cole, you hit on it there. If you grew up on the video game, you just got a live-action version of that. Like, hearing people softly mutter fatality after they just despine someone on screen, that's my idea of a good time. That makes me laugh and keeps me entertained. So, no, I don't think it was a waste of time. I think it was exactly what it was supposed to be, which is, again, up to the viewer to decide. So if you approach it with the right attitude, you're going to have about 2 hours of a pretty good time.
So I have a couple concerns. I'm not going to say it's a complete waste of time, because I'm like you. I think if you go in with the right mindset, it can be enjoyable. But so the main character, I don't even know what dude he was. Like, still, I spent the entire movie, I thought he was going to be Liu Kang, and then obviously he's not. His great-grandfather, whatever, ends up being Scorpion, but I never figured out who exactly he was. The lady on the bad side of things that had, like, the monster face, I think she was Baraka, but that was never explained to me. When did Sub-Zero become the end-all, be-all of all Mortal Kombat figures? I didn't really know that he was kind of the guy that nobody could ever beat. Like, yeah, he could freeze you, and he had the little slide kick across the screen, which was cool, and the uppercut. But, I mean, there were other guys that were able to handle him. I kind of didn't like the way that you just passed off getting the logo, that all of a sudden you could enter the tournament. That wasn't really a ton of fun. I thought the whole thing with how Jax got his arms could have been much more intriguing. So, I don't know. I found myself very critical of it. But, again, my expectations were pretty low going in.
Yeah, I will say Jack's getting his arms frozen blasted off was one of the funnier scenes in the entire movie. And then you're right, the build up to it, seeing him with baby robot arms was not something as a visual I was prepared for. And I apologize for the spoilers right now for anyone out here, but again, if you're going into
it's
this
Mortal
movie,
Kombat, because no one's getting mad about. Like, come on,
you're not going to be surprised by anything. But you're right. This movie, like, if you had aired it on the Sci-Fi Channel, it would have been right at home. Like, that's the level of quality I think we're dealing with here. It's not quite Sharknado, but it's not that much farther above it.
All right, so last one. You're a big Avengers guy as well. So I text John Saber, and I'm like, hey, man, listen, I'm not super comic book guy. I'm not into these, but John, our producer, recently went on this little bit of a rant on Twitter about how great one of the last scenes in Avengers Endgame was, and the cinematic experience and how everyone should have that and enjoy that. So I'm thinking, I got a lot of time. Now might be my chance to dive into a couple of these and kind of see what they are. He actually gave me I said, just tell me the ones I need to see, the order, but don't give me all of them. He's like, yeah, it's easy. Watch the Avengers and then watch Avengers Infinity War and then watch Avengers Endgame. I watched the Avengers, and keep in mind, I'm coming off anesthesia and I'm on pain medication, all right? So things happen. I watched the Avengers and then Avengers Endgame. How bad did that screw up my experience for someone who automatically is not going to be into these movies?
So I don't think it screwed it up too bad. Like, I know people that have watched these movies pretty out of order and pretty randomly. I go back to, I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been so good that you can plop back into any of these spots and you'll always kind of be able to understand. And as long as you've got those two already in the hip pocket, you're going to be good. If you go back and watch the other two Avengers movies, there are some people that would argue you'll actually appreciate them more now that you've already kind of seen where the characters will go. So I don't think you're too far gone to go back and watch them. I still think it's more than worth your time.
All right, so I normally would let you run, but I did want to throw this out. So Dillon Gibbons just hit the transfer portal. So another Notre Dame offensive lineman gone. Big hit, big concern, or no big deal?
You know what? I'm a little bit concerned, but I think overall that's one of the positions at Notre Dame. Offensive and defensive line, the pipeline that they've started to build there recruiting-wise, just an understanding of identity. I mean, they got a couple of true freshmen out there in South Bend right now who I was hearing glowing reviews, like way higher than we should be talking about early enrollee freshmen on the offensive line. So I think this is going to start to become more of the norm, and I think Notre Dame, the depth they've built up on O&D line, is going to really be able to hold them over from that. So certainly wish him well. I you know, that was a guy we got to see a little bit of in the past season, but overall I think they've got enough depth at that spot. Should be good to go.
Gola, great stuff. Always appreciate the time. Good to catch up. Let's do it again soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Mike Golick Jr. of ESPN, at Mike Golick Jr. You can follow him on Twitter there, of ESPN. And as always, he joins us on the Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline. Zero sugar, zero carbs, 80 calories. Try cucumber lime, peach pear, spicy pineapple today.
This is Three Man Front.